Okay, I've got a question. You were talking about, you know, Dogen's way as being one way and not necessarily the only way. And if he didn't exist, you know, where would you go if it wasn't for Nishijima and Dogen?
No idea.
Yeah. Or is there a similar school that you feel is a good one? Or
I don't have any idea, Goran. Because I kind of discovered, I went to Japan, I probably told this before, I went to Japan for a 6-month work contract, and I saw this advert for Zen seminar in English, and I went along and I met this guy. So I wasn't looking for anything, and yet I found something which interested me. So I started sitting, which I liked immediately. And he was working on the Shobogenzo, so I was curious. So I started and kind of carried on. I've no idea. I wasn't looking for a teacher, and I wasn't looking for practice. I was looking for something to do in my life, because I'd left England just for 6 months. I was teaching at the College of FE, and I wanted a break, so I did this, and I didn't come back, so I can't really answer. It wasn't that I was, you know, it seems that some people were kind of searching, and then they read books, and then they think, oh, okay, I go and find out about this, and they go, I didn't do any of that. So if I'd never met him, might have worked out my contract. Well, I did meet my then wife, Yoko, at the same time. So maybe I'd have stayed in Japan, just working. That's all I can say, really. I don't know.
I guess what I'm asking is which other ways, you know, this study of Dogen has, in a sense, helped you to get to where you are, and which other ways do you think are valid or good or worthwhile?
Karate, from what I've read about it, sounds good. All kinds of sports sound good. Practicing a musical instrument sounds, you know, if you can devote your life to it, to be a musician, must be quite rewarding, I guess. Other Buddhist ways, or you know, I don't know, because I've never looked at them really.
You translated Nagarjuna.
Pardon?
You translated Nagarjuna.
I did, yeah.
And he's long before Dogen, isn't he?
Yes, the 2nd century.
Are there other lineages, other traditions that pick up from him, but that didn't go in the way Dogen did?
Yeah, there are lots. Yeah, but I don't know anything about them.
Okay. How much do you think Chinese, like that Taoist philosophy, has merged into Buddhism and to create Zen, because when I read Indian sort of Buddhist scriptures, they have a very different flavour to Chinese and Japanese. And this, you know, the Taoist sort of, well, yin and yang is duality and simplicity and the sort of simple way. It feels like it's really melded with Indian Buddhism sometimes.
People say so.
Yeah.
People say so. But if you, there's a Russian scholar called Chebatsky who lived at the turn of the last century, 1890s, early 1900s, and he lived in St. Petersburg, and he spent his life translating early Buddhist texts, and he's written two magnificent volumes. They're called Buddhist Logic, volumes 1 and 2, and they're very similar to Dogen. They're based on the early Indian writings. They're really very excellent books, but very heavy to get through. Similar themes, but in a very different way. Instantaneousness of the present moment, the inescapableness of cause and effect, and those kind of basic Buddhist assertions. But I think Chinese Buddhism must have a lot of influences from Taoism. See, it's difficult. You need to ask a scholar, somebody who studied it. I suppose you could say I'm not really a booky person. I read very little. I've always been like that. I think my upbringing, my parents never had many books in the house, so I never learnt the excitement of books that some people have. So even now I go into a bookshop and I look at the cover, I look at the picture on the front, and I turn around and look at the back, and I thumb through it and look at any photographs, and I put it back. Unless somebody's told me about it, or it's a subject that is going around in my brain. So I've read very little of other traditions and other things. Well, maybe that's why I came up with those simple questions. In the early days when I met Nishijima and I was immersed in the Shobogenzo, see, what fascinated me about it was the parallels with about action and action, and for me climbing and that kind of world, and that those parallels fascinated me. The spiritual stuff, I kind of just, you know, all the spiritual beautiful passages from the Lotus Sutra or blah blah, but there seemed to be like a practical thread through everything, and Dogen writes about these little stories about this, like this national masters on a bridge, and they bring a bit of a weirdo Indian sage up to him who reckons he can read minds. And the master says, okay, read my mind then. And the sage does his stuff. And the master says, do it, try it again. And he does it 3 times. And Dogen's discussion about that is, you know, you can't read people's minds like that. And so that kind of aspect, the kind of practicality, down to earthness in the middle of 13th century poetry just interested me. But I wasn't going anywhere. I'm still not going anywhere. So, where am I? Where have I got to? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I've got to the starting point. So, you'll have to ask questions about, you know, are there other traditions which are similar? I mean, other people, my friend Jeremy has read quite a bit, and he said that there's a Tibetan school that's quite similar to Dogen, and I'm sure other people here have read other stuff and can answer questions like that, but I can't really. And I'm not interested, actually.
One thing we come across very often when we're reading the Shobogenzo on a Wednesday night is again saying verify an experience.
Yes. That's lovely. Yeah. Those kind of things are what attracted me. But I didn't know anything about, I didn't know much about Eastern religions or anything. I knew that the Beatles had gone to see the Maharishi, and I tried TM, practicing TM on the bed. Other than that, I was ignorant, really. And in that sense, I still am. But I don't mind. So it's quite interesting, this asking questions thing. In Japan, we used to ask questions all the time. A lot of it was because we couldn't understand what he said. But also, we'd ask the same question again and get a different answer. And In the Czech Republic and Slovakia, when I give talks there, nobody asks questions because they're a bit afraid to. I don't really understand why people don't ask questions. I don't understand why you don't have questions. Why don't you have questions? Don't you have any questions? Why don't you want to say them? Are you embarrassed? Are you... think you might say the wrong thing? Why not ask questions about yourself? You know, so it's a constant puzzle to me, always has been, because in Japan people ask questions all the time. Maybe the culture is a bit more like that. We usually want to give answers or make statements. What do you think?
You always say that you have to find for yourself.
Oh, is that right?
You did say that.
So that means you don't, that means to you, you don't ask other people, you have to find it for yourself inside, self-contained. Is that what we mean? Like, you know, I mustn't ask anybody, because I got to do it for myself, kind of feeling.
Yeah,
question earlier, just the beginning of this session.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody mentioned discipline yesterday,
yeah.
And guaranteed in connection to why group is important and why it is important and why we shouldn't dissolve the group.
Well, that, you know, that was a joke when I said
that.
Okay, good. I'm glad you...
humor. Yes. And discipline was mentioned as one of the reasons why we need to get together and to sit together and have this. And I was wondering, what is discipline and why discipline is important? And why can you... sit when you fancy sitting and stop sitting when you have other priorities and then get back to sitting? And if we are not getting anywhere or not aiming or not having a goal, and it's a value in itself whenever you see it, right? What is then discipline in relation to this? Just simple action of getting what you are getting from it when you get to it. Did I make myself?
I think so.
Yeah.
Was it the main question is about discipline?
Yes. So basically, what is the place of discipline in this practice, and do we need discipline?
Well, I find I do. You know, I find if I leave it too long, I sit less, and then I find other things that are more important. And in the end, I go, I've got to get back to Wednesday night and Tom and the bell. And then I sit for an hour and it kind of replaces me back into that ability to just sit. And I get the next week, I can sit more.
Is it discipline? You feel like you, well, this is the time I really need to go back to that Wednesday night or Sunday retreat or 3 days retreat. It's not like somebody's beating you into it, right? It's just that.
No, but the group helps me to, when my own discipline is weak, all I have to do is go along to the group and it gives me strength to do it.
The term discipline sounds a bit kind of
strict.
It sounds like someone forcing you, beating you if you misbehave or something.
As if there is a regimen, you know, that you have to follow to the T, and I wonder why. I remember this analogy with the bell that you stop ringing if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that, but still, and again, why do I need to ring all the time? Maybe I'd like a month or two of being not ringing.
Well, in practice,
being a bell.
But I'm sure people do stop when they feel like stopping, and they do start again when they feel like starting. Maybe.
Is it okay?
Well, regardless of what we think, people are that's a fact that people are going to do that. But maybe a better word another way of saying discipline is just intent. Because what makes you get up and sit in the morning if you do that is you feel the intent to do that, so you make it part of your life, and then maybe your intent gets weaker and you stop, and maybe going to the group kind of helps to strengthen your intent because you see other people
but
doing
it. But why is it weak? Why do you need to label it weak if I don't have intent to get up in the morning and sit, if I believe that getting 8 hours of solid sleep is more important than getting up and getting 5 minutes sitting on the cushion?
Well, weak is a value judgment.
That's my priority, it's not necessarily a weakness, is it?
I don't mean weakness in a moral sense. It's not a moral judgment. It means that...
But it's still a label.
Well, some forces are stronger than others, right? Force of gravity is closer at the centre of the Earth than it is thousands of miles away. It's not a moral judgment. But your desire for sleep may be stronger than your intention to sit, so your intention is weaker at that point. I'm not saying it's good or bad. But the group can help to strengthen the intention.
Strengthen what?
The intention.
You could use continuity of practice rather than discipline or something.
But even continuity is questionable in this sense.
Can you make it more personal? Because I know you.
Yeah.
I know you for some years, and you seem to have this conflict between I want somebody to make me do it, I don't want to do it, or I feel I should do it, I haven't got time to do it.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
your question's a personal question, isn't it? You're asking about the conflict you have inside.
Yeah, about priorities, about, yeah.
So that's why I say you have to sort it out yourself. At the same time, you sort it out by choosing. For instance, if you want a disciplined Zen group, you can join the International Zen Association,
mm-hmm.
who wear black robes and they do things in a disciplined way. Discipline, I mean simple discipline. Disciplined way, so everybody's ordered, and the teacher sits at the front and teaches, and then everybody asks questions. And to ask a question, you have to come out to the front and sit down on a cushion. And so they have it's a Japanese discipline. So you have to investigate your internal question, conflict, which you have by. Not by sitting and working out inside you and not asking any questions, but by going along to, if you think that discipline's important and then there's not enough, for instance, in our group, then go along to a group that's got a lot of discipline. Or if you think that you need to find your own freedom, then stop practicing. So you've got to find your own, where is the source of this conflict in me? Not as a generalisation. We love to generalise. We ask questions in a general way. Very few people say, you know, I am having a problem with this. Instead, they generalise it. So, but it's not a general, questions are never general, they're personal. But you can't find the answer personally. You find the answer through trying different things.
I guess that's why this word discipline and group for discipline kind of like what is the opposite to resonate?
Yeah,
what's
didn't resonate.
Yeah.
I see the group and what we have Wednesday sitting, regular Wednesday sitting and regular Sundays retreat as a kind of like structure which supports. It's there when you need it.
But that's the same as what I'm saying.
But it's, no.
Yeah. Because I go along, I get that sense of support with you guys sitting around, and it makes it easier for me to get back into my sitting. So in a sense, the only discipline I need is to get along to the group, and then it's done, because I'm happy when I'm sitting with everybody else. It makes it easy for me.
It may just be that your association with the word discipline is a completely personal one, different to other people. I don't have a problem with the words like responsibility, commitment. And that was because my understanding was a very narrow understanding,
okay.
Very biased, very to one side.
Mm.
But I started to understand that there is a much bigger meaning in those words. So if you have grown in a place where the word like discipline and commitment and responsibility and all those words were very imposed from outside, you will have a very negative appreciation of the word, and you will have used to have a big reaction against those words.
Mm-hmm.
And they jumped as well, and they were disciplined. But it's a bigger meaning. It doesn't mean what we thought that it meant. I know now.
Yeah.
Those words didn't mean exactly just that. That was a very...
I mean it in terms of self-discipline, being able to do what I really want to do, and sort of get to where I really want to go without listening to those internal voices that go, yes, but you don't need to do that right now, you know. I just do it. And I know that feeling, and I don't listen to that voice. I go along and I know I'll be happy after my sitting. So it's my own discipline. It's not the group's sort of disciplining me. That's the sense I kind of mean it in.
The group is, there's only the people who show up, you know.
Absolutely.
It's like you show up and there's the group.
Yeah.
You are the group.
Yeah.
And it's only there for you when you need it, if everyone, if not everyone, if enough people show up.
Yeah.
And if it exerts any discipline on anyone, it's the most gentle discipline
it's
I've
very
ever
gentle.
Seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's non-existent.
Does anyone think we're not disciplined enough? Because, you know, Matt and I have some sticks.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I don't think it's gentle, you see.
So, Mike, you asked for a more personal view.
Yeah.
Or Cheryl. On this topic. So, I've had periods where my mind has a tendency just to race, and I get profoundly anxious, not mildly anxious, overwhelming sense of not being able to stop falling, anxious, right? And I've also known a calmness in the moment, and the latter is far preferable. And so it's not a question of discipline as much as I'm just happier when I do this. And if I am finding myself, you know, straying from doing it every morning, then I tell myself I have to double down and do it twice as long so I can get back to a state where I can do it for just 30 minutes. And so it's not a question of something that's imposed on the outside, it's almost an imperative, because I know what I'm like when I don't, and I know what I'm like when I do. And, you know, my wife, the honest woman that she is, will tell me she prefers it when I do. So it's not, I mean, I don't know what the word is. You know, it's I would say it's an imperative. It's not something that I impose upon myself or is imposed upon me. It's something I just simply have.
Yes, it's interesting. What is the group, really? And then Pavel in the Czech Republic once said at one of our retreats, there is no Dogen Sangha. It appears when we get together and disappears when we go home. And I'd like that very much.
Mm-hmm.
There is no group of us. The group only exists when we're together. And it's a different group. It might be similar. I like to think of it like that, really.
So the group is an action, not a thing.
Pardon?
The group is an action, it appears in action.
Yeah, you could say, yeah. Well, it's lots of people. But I feel it's quite important that if somebody wants to stop sitting, they should try stop sitting. Because only then can you find whether you want to sit. If you think, oh, you know, I'd better, I don't think that's... I mean, my own experience resonates with Lewis, I'm a much better person when I do it, and so I do it. If I have a bad period, I do it twice as much. I do, and I've got the time. So sometimes, quite often, I sit 3 or 4 times a day. Why? Because it gets me back to a bearable life.
considering how conscious it is for me, in terms of my choice to sit or not sit, over the recent years, what I notice is that I go through periods where I don't appear to be sitting. It's kind of vanished, and then I find I'm starting to sit, and then I sit more and more regularly, and I'm back in the practice. But I don't recall myself ever making a clear decision.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stopping.
Yeah.
To find out what it's like, or I need to start again. It doesn't seem to happen like that.
Yeah, the same. And that's what I thought. You know, when my hair grows too long, that it's just unbearable hanging around. I get up and go to my hairdresser, and in the kind of similar way,
mm-hmm.
when it becomes unbearable to hold on all that, whatever, I just
mm-hmm.
go in and see it. But if I start making conscious decision, I need to be disciplined and find those half an hour, whatever
mm-hmm.
happens in life. I think that would make it unbearable almost.
But you're waiting until it's unbearable before you go and sit to kind of cure it.
In a way, but unbearable, the feeling of unbearable is very subjective, right? Sometimes it's sometimes very little makes it sort of like half a day and you already need another sleep.
Well, you just told us what you say you do. Although you just explained what you do, you know, you wait until it's unbearable. But I see every retreat I come to, every city I go to, you seem to be regular.
Because
so it doesn't seem to agree with what you just said. Well, I think it's a question of following yourself. You know, you're going somewhere, and all the feelings of should I, shouldn't I, do I like it, don't I like it, is it helpful, is it not helpful, do I have time, don't I have time, are all noise. But meanwhile, you're doing something. So follow what you're doing.
I just don't like what
you don't like it? Yeah, well, I don't like what I'm doing either. Giving bloody talks all the time. I end up coming here and turning up and doing it.
So how is that for you now that has changed so much? I mean, you used to have a great energy to want to give talks. Do you feel differently now?
My mind is empty, so I don't have anything to say.
Okay.
So I have to wait for something to come into my mind, you know, like a kind of, like you get themes in your mind, everybody does, don't they? Like,
yeah.
Could be anything. So I wait until there's some kind of theme, and then I open my mouth and talk about the theme in a kind of unstructured way.
Because, you come to these retreats, which is structured around Zazen and your talks, those are the two, what I would say.
Yeah.
So, there's a, you know, you've got to deliver.
I don't think I do, really.
You don't have to, but there's an expectation.
I know, but I don't like that expectation.
But, and yet you come.
Yeah, because I need to sit with you. I come for the sitting. Not for the talks.
Because I'd be perfectly comfortable if you just said, I don't want you to talk today. If you didn't want to.
Osho did it.
Huh?
Osho did it.
Well, he had a stroke, didn't he?
He just stopped giving talks.
Oh, yeah.
Stopped giving talks for like 10 years.
Well, let's do that then.
Groups changed, and you know, it's developed, and you've changed.
Yeah, true.
These scrubs never done Doku-san type of thing, so one-to-one.
No.
The teacher.
No, my teacher never did Doku-san. I think it can encourage a kind of, you know, I'm going to talk to the teacher, and the teacher gives advice. So I've got problems, and the teacher's going to solve them. Kind of relationship. It can, but I've never been in a group that does Doku-san. Have you?
I have, yeah.
And
yes, on a retreat.
And how did you find it?
Well, it's a sort of an unusual situation to find yourself in to begin
yeah.
with. But I think for some of the sort of personal questions about your practice, it is easier to talk than in front of 20 people, say, I'm having these student
okay.
thoughts, is that
yeah, yeah.
normal? And the teacher will say yes. Don't worry about it. And you go away thinking, okay, well, that was a stupid question.
I found it an almost alarmingly intense experience sometimes. Like in the middle of a silent retreat, if the only person you're talking to is the teacher, and you know, it's in a small room and it's probably candlelit, like you're on a date or something, so your eyes are both lit up, and amidst all this silence and solitude, there's a very personal connection. I mean, it can feel great, but it's also kind of dangerous, I think.
Mm-hmm. In the sense of sort of power games and things.
Can very easily. I mean, yeah. Needn't.
No.
Most teachers are probably very kind and responsible people, but you know, everyone goes wrong here and there.
We never had Doku-san, but we always had, you know, Mike sitting on a sofa and you come and sit next to him.
Well, you know, in the early days, I knew all about Dogen and Shenpo Genzo and Zen, and you lot didn't. But now you probably know as much as more than me in some ways. No.
We're only on the first book.
you pulled that face because you think you don't. Because you think, you've imagined all this knowledge I've got, but I don't know where it is. I mean, I only remember things when they're stimulated by a question or something. I don't have all this store of knowledge. Because it's not activated. Nobody in any of the groups says, I've been reading Shenpo Genzo's chapter so-and-so. Explain what it means, because it's difficult. Nobody ever asked me that. But lots of people say, oh, you'd spent all those years and you know all about it. But nobody ever asked me.
My experience of that.
Pardon?
My experience of that.
Yes.
That you would... you know, you were very, you had a kind of passion for it, for sharing that Shenpo Genzo with us.
Yeah.
So you pick the last one, get the book out.
Yeah.
And today we're going to do Vichy.
Yeah.
And you deliver, you explain it, and then
yeah.
somebody would ask a question, and then you would come out of it, and you would start channeling something.
Yeah.
Which is nothing to do with the book.
Yeah.
That's what people liked. And so, in a way, it's fascinating, and it's a very direct teaching.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. But also, it lets people off the hook, because you can just enjoy that.
Yeah.
It's exciting. And you don't need children again, so it's kind of like that, I think, for a lot of people. So, that might, you know, they may not need to feel that they need to go to the source of the text, because...
Yeah.
You're already channeling the source.
You
see what I mean?
Channeling the source. Maybe.
But maybe formulating the question related to Shobogenzi is already a task.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree with you. But I remember you said before about Shobogenzi, how to read it is like looking at a picture and not, you know, trying to like understand all the text. And I think that completely changed the way I read it. Like, I don't read it that way. Like,
no.
I'm trying to intellectually or try to understand everything.
Mm.
And it's almost like giving a distance, sort of like stepping back a little bit and kind of like, oh, okay, you know, it's like poetry or a painting.
Mm.
And I think that completely changed it. And so I don't get obsessed over, oh, what does this mean? Like, why is he going on and on and on about something? And I think that's very helpful. But
good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a bit of, I feel these, my talks this time are quite self-centred, because I have an issue, don't I, somewhere? Like, if I've got something to say, then there's no problem, because I waffle on and you stimulate me with your questions or answers, and I get on a, what do they call it, on a roll, and everything's fine. But maybe temporary, or maybe permanent. I've come to a point where I'm really saying, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to be? What do you want me to do? Maybe that's another question.
I have a personal question.
Yeah.
When I sit and I want to be like more present, you know, notice that I'm like not present enough somehow. I want to be like more present, or like this is what is happening now.
Yeah.
It feels quite harsh. It feels like criticism, and like my whole body like stiffens up, and it doesn't really help me to get to where I am now. What it really does is like it stiffens me up. I don't know any like soft way to get there. I'm afraid if I just like let it all slide, I'll just like fall asleep and never get anywhere. So I'm scared I'll just like not do anything if I don't pull myself together. If I pull myself together, I just get more tight. So I don't know what to do.
Well, you're very intelligent. I mean, your work is very intellectually intense. So probably quite naturally you do a lot of thinking.
Yeah.
So it's maybe it might be difficult for you to stop that thinking.
Yeah.
So that's a simple problem, really. It's difficult for you to stop thinking. So you notice that in Zazen, it's difficult then to be present without thoughts. Well, that is a kind of the other side of your excellence, if you like. We've all got two sides to everything. So, you know, your intellectual skills are in great demand in your job and everywhere. But the other side of that is, maybe it's difficult for you to empty your mind, or for your mind to stop. So how could you help it to stop? What things do help besides Zazen?
Dance. Yeah.
So, what were you to? What kind of dancing do you do?
I do contact with you, see, and it's like because some human being is touching you.
Yeah.
It's like I feel my body much better when I feel
yeah.
someone's hand on me.
Yeah.
And I can't be too harsh. I can't be like. To relax, to you, or like have to be kind of like have to listen to somebody, yeah. I have to relate to them. And that's hard, but physically, and that's quite hard. But it's like it's definitely no time to think there.
Okay. So the more things you can do, which take you away from intellectual activity, I would think will encourage a kind of more of a state where you're not always in your head. I edit scientific papers, so two or three days at a time I'm immersed in this complicated paper, which I first of all I have to understand it, and then I have to edit it. And it's very difficult if I sit during that period. It's very difficult for me to sit. I sit, but it's not a nice, peaceful sit. But when I finish the job and zip it off on the internet, then I can sit, and everything kind of drops away. Huh. So it's, for me, it's clear that when I'm doing something that occupies my intellectual machine, then it's difficult to be present. I don't think that total immersion in an intellectual activity is the same as being present. Some people feel it is, you know, and then they say, "Oh, thinking's a kind of act." I don't agree. I think, and certainly in my experience, it's like you have to wash out all the thoughts. And you can do it by going on a hike, a long hike, or a long cycle ride for 3 or 4 hours. And then I can return to an emptier mind. Well, that's what we say, emptier mind. I don't really know what that means, but there's not so much going on. There's not so many thoughts going around.
I've got a related question. I'm also one of these intellectuals that thinks too much, finds it hard to stop, and sometimes in sitting I'm able to let go, and that's great, and other times it comes back, so you're always trying to get back to that quiet place. But I can recognise that, and like you said, I know there are things that help me sort of stop thinking too much. One is martial arts, another one is maybe just being out in nature, going looking at the chickens or something like that. But something you were saying before really made me think. You were talking about reading, how you don't read that much.
No.
I read all the time. Right, guilty secret, I'm a complete bookworm. I love it. I grew up with books, I always read books, I enjoy books. I've read a lot about Buddhism, but I read a lot of other things too. And obviously on one level, I'm sure no one here is being anti-book and saying you shouldn't read things, and obviously it's good to read about Dogen or whatever else, but can you take it too far? Should you give your mind a rest? Can it make it harder to...
Well, this is where I say it's up to you. Just notice the connection. See, it's not good or bad. How wonderful, you know, you love books. That must be lovely. You can go in and buy books and take them home and read them. Lots of people do. But if you're always reading, you're always processing. And therefore, there is a result from that. And you know what the result is. So is it okay or not okay? So that's what I mean, it's up to you, but you can try stopping, but maybe you can't, in which case you can try and find a way to live with it. But we all have to live with how we are. We can't get rid of all our habits. We can notice them, and sometimes we can resolve them. I should take out the we and say I. I can't get rid of things that I know are not so helpful. I know what they are, and I can make efforts, but I can't predict the result. So, what do you think about your reading?
I never had this thought until tonight, actually.
Oh.
So, it's a thought that's still working itself through. But I guess you're talking about awareness in a way. Just
well, you could say to other people, you know, ask other people here, you know, do you read a lot? Do you think that's okay? Do you find it helpful to sitting? Or you could investigate. Like a sociologist do, go around with questionnaires. Excuse me,
yeah,
do you read a lot?
I'm going to be around with my clipboard.
Yeah, why not? If you do it to me, I say no, I don't.
No, I know the answer because you told us.
Yeah. But I coming right back to my kind of questions yesterday, maybe the reason that my mind is becoming more and more empty is because I don't read and I don't have any job to do, so I can just be. Maybe it's okay.
Sounds really good.
Does it? Mm, thank you.
Because you gave all your books to us.
I gave them all away, yeah.
Oh, you missed that, Jake.
It would only have encouraged me.
Leanna's got them all.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Leanna's got most of them.
She backed the van up outside.
Are you a disciplined librarian?
Well.
Are you strict if people don't tell them books?
In Buddhist terminology that's come into English, there's the word enlightenment. That's often... Well, my teacher used to prefer the word realisation. What is it that we realise then? Well, for me, the only things that I'm slowly realising is how I am. Not how I should be, but how I am. And then that helps me to sometimes to manage it or to reflect on it, or I don't know, but just realization, not making myself better or getting further. And I think this is where, for instance, in karate you have a path.
Yeah.
And I talk about it. Path, but there's not really any path in Dogen's teachings.
No.
There's just self-realization.
Mm.
What self-realization means, oh, I see. And things like, if I do that, then that's the result. God, it's taken me so many years. But I can't stop. Oh, okay, well, don't try and stop, just notice that when you do that, that's the result. And things like that. And then gradually build up all the realisations.
So is that what he's saying when he says to study the Dharma is to study the self?
Yes. It is. And to study the self is to forget the self.
I was waiting for it.
What does it mean
when
to forget the self?
When does that happen?
I can't remember. Well, you could interpret it in lots of different ways, but maybe to forget the self means to stop worrying. Now just forget the self. Stop focusing on yourself, for instance, because no, I see that's the way it is. That's the way things are.
I think that's what self-realization for me is. It's a, can be quite an uncomfortable.
Yes, endlessly uncomfortable.
What an idiot you are.
Yes.
Yeah. Like,
No
yes.
job, no books. You have a university degree, Mike.
Pardon?
And they have no job, you don't read books, you have a university degree for something, you know. Why don't you use it?
I've forgotten it. electronics.
That's good.
It was all analog stuff. I've forgotten lots of things.
Time to sit.
Mm. Well, this is strange. Although I'm kind of thrashing about, I feel, in my talks, it's immensely helpful to me. So thank you all.
Thank you.
I didn't expect it to be. Nobody expects
the Spanish Inquisition.
Okay, thank you.